to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks to you, our listeners. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen. Paul Wearson is understandably back at his farm, waiting for his car to warm up to start. We'll miss him. As the new year gets started, we have one special event in Ames and an assortment of stories featuring the social anchors in various towns throughout Story County. First, we'll be talking with Chad Sonka about the Metropolitan Opera auditions taking place on Saturday in Ames. Then we'll turn to Marlis Barker, editor of the Nevada Journal and Tri-County Times, about the magic of small-town newspapers. After that, we'll hear from Father Time himself as he prepares to visit the Slater Area Historical Association. And finally, Janet Thorson will tell us about the excitement of moving the Cambridge Public Library into the new Cambridge City Center. If you heard Carol Horowitz on Ames Previews the Arts last month, you know some of the history of the Metropolitan Opera auditions, which have been taking place annually in Iowa for many years and in Ames for most of those years. Our focus today is on the future from the singer's point of view. This year, we have a winner to watch, Chad Sonka, lecturer in Applied Voice and Opera Studio, who was one of three last year's state winners. And he will be entering again this year with bigger ambitions. I spoke with him yesterday about what the auditions mean to him and what it's like to sing your favorite arias. I'm here with Chad Sonka, who is going to tell us about the Metropolitan Opera audition. So, Chad, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us how you know about the Metropolitan Opera auditions.
My name is Chad Sonka. I'm a opera singer in the area, but my full-time job is that I am the new opera studio director along with Jody Goebel at Iowa State University. I also have my own private studio there as well, but I grew up in Iowa. I grew up in a small town outside of Cedar Rapids, Van Horn, and later on in high school, I started taking voice lessons. I ended up going to Luther College for my degree in music and then went on for a graduate degree in music at Manhattan School of Music. So, of course, when you're out in New York City, you get enveloped in the musical landscape environment and one can't be out there and not hear about the Metropolitan Opera, of course. And as an aspiring opera singer, I immersed myself in that environment. And when I came back, I knew when I was ready, after many, many years of training, I would try for this Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions, which is kind of the coup de grace, the grand competition that many young singers aspire to advance in. So I decided I was ready last year, and I, along with two other wonderful colleagues that are now friends, advanced to the regional round of the competition. So we won the Iowa District, and I'm proud to be a native Iowan and win the Iowa District. It was an absolute blast. So I'm looking forward to competing again this year.
Well, how far did you get past the Iowa districts last year?
I just made it to the regional. The level is quite high there. And since it was my first time doing it, I now know kind of what the yardstick, what the meter is, what they're looking for. So I feel ready to go into the auditions this year with a new set of skills, hopefully advancing past the regional round and heading to New York City.
So you have the districts here in Ames,
yes.
And then you go to the regionals. Then if you win in the regionals, then you go...
We go all the way to the Big Apple. We go to New York City.
And what has this meant for you in your career since last year?
Well, it's certainly been a resume booster at the base level, but it's taught me a lot about what to expect in terms of competitions. At a singer of my age, it's very common to use competitions to kind of gauge where you are in your development. It's also a nice way to make money. And it's just now that I feel that I'm ready to throw my hat into that ring. So in terms of my own development, it's been integral in helping me with not only my own performing and realizing what audiences really enjoy, but it's helped me with my teaching as well, too. I can parlay that information back to my students on how to give successful auditions, do competitions successfully, and of course, relax their nerves.
So what do you do to relax your nerves?
What do I do to relax my nerves? Well, it gets to a point now where what you do is fun. And I think we as musicians need to remember that. You get to a point in your – or a singer gets to a point in their musical development where they can kind of forget about the technical aspects of it. And you focus on the words and you focus on the text. Prior to that, what I always preach is preparation is the key to making sure the nerves aren't there. If you are prepared as much as possible, then you'll, of course, be less nervous. You know, you give advice to a child who's nervous about a particular test. What's the way to not be nervous about the test? Well, study. And I think that's applicable to singing as well. And then, like I just said, remembering that what we do is fun too, and that you are there to communicate a message. So if I focus on that and say, okay, I'm here to deliver a message to all of you, whatever that might be in the particular operatic aria I'm singing, then the nerves just kind of go away. So, and I just kind of feel at home out there on stage. And I think I speak for many natural performers when I say that too.
Well, you have spoken so far about what it's like from the singer's perspective. But our listeners are going to be mostly audience members, and many of them, of course, know about these auditions. So a lot of local opera buffs probably make up part of your audience. You do have an
Certainly.
Audience, right?
Absolutely. I was pleasantly surprised at the size of the audience last year. And I think that's important to show the world of opera and what it is we opera singers do to the masses when it's free. I think that's important and wonderful.
So when you say you were surprised at the size of the audience, do you have any idea of
sure.
the number?
I know that since teaching there now, I know that Recital Hall holds over 300, and that recital hall was about three-fourths full easily, so maybe in the 200 to 50 range. And I expect it to be the same this year. And what's wonderful that I saw last year was that the demographic was quite wide, too. When I looked out there, I saw children, I saw teenagers, I saw those of an older generation, I saw middle-aged. The want and need for well-performed music will always be there, and I think that's what you always get at these competitions, because you have singers performing their favorite music, which they've studied for years. I mean, we often work on a singular song, singular operatic aria. Well, we're never really quite done with any given song, always studying. So I think that's why it's such a draw in this area.
Why don't you tell us where mm-hmm. and when this Metropolitan Opera audition will be?
Gladly, gladly. So the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions will be held this Saturday, and they begin at noon at Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall on Iowa State's campus. And they usually go until about 3 o'clock or so. The judges deliberate, and then there's a wonderful awards ceremony that follows along with refreshments. So it's this Saturday, January 6th.
Well, it sounds like an ideal way for beginning opera listeners to come and
absolutely.
Just...
That's a really important note, because, like I said, you're going to have several singers, upwards of, I think there are just over 20 signed up right now, singing their favorite music, what shows them off the best. And oftentimes these operatic arias are the crown jewels of the repertoire, because they're performed often. So you're going to not only get a taste of the operatic repertoire, you're going to get a taste of all kinds of voices, what kind of singing is happening out there right now. It's a wonderful smattering of music that's free for the public on a Saturday afternoon. Hopefully it warms up a little.
Now, I have a question also.
Yes.
I was just thinking about all of these arias that mm-hmm. people will be singing. Is it common that two or three people will pick the same aria to sing?
Less common than you might think. I'm going to talk a little foreign language here. There's a German word called Fach, F-A-C-H. And what it is, it's a classification system of certain voice types. So think of it as like a thumbprint. No one voice is alike. So there are certain arias that caters to certain voice types better than others. So because there's such a smattering of different voice types, you often don't hear the same aria sung over and over again. I remember last year that maybe happened once where the same aria was sung twice. Now, that being said, there are popular arias, operatic arias that get sung over and over again, just because their popularity, their beauty, their ability to communicate, what have you. But by and large, not too many repeats, which is good in a competition because then you get your own individual stamp on whatever it is you're singing.
Well, it's also good to know that the voices are so different.
Exactly, exactly. So even though there might be two, so I am a baritone, there might be another baritone that's participating, that's competing, but we might have very different voice types. Whereas my voice, I don't know if you can tell by my speaking, tends to be on the lower side. There might be a baritone who kind of speaks up in this range and he sings some lighter material. Same thing for women. So you're going to hear a wonderful diverse array of all kinds of repertoire, even within voice types.
I was thinking as you were describing the various future competitions you mm-hmm. might be involved with, mm-hmm. That we should follow you. So you will report back after the auditions on Saturday, but then after the regionals, mm-hmm. and if you go to New York, what happens there?
Well, here's hoping. In New York, it's a, like I said, I've kind of been dying to go back there since I completed my graduate work at Manhattan School of Music. And, you know, out there, when you advance that far, you get to sing in the Metropolitan Opera House, which is kind of a dream for any opera singer. And then if you make it to the finals round, you end up singing with the orchestra, with a maestro. The stage is all yours. I have friends who've made it to the finals and have won. And I've talked to them. It's really quite an exhilarating moment.
Does the Met get any of their new singers in this way?
Yeah, absolutely. Oftentimes, if a singer wins this competition, they might be funneled into what's called a young artist program, and the Metropolitan Operas is one of the premier in the country. So their program is called the Lindemann Young Artist Program, and it's more or less a training ground for young artists to become professional artists. So that program can feed into the main stage productions there in the house, or it can lead to other large opera houses across the whole entire country. Chicago has a very reputable opera house, as I'm sure many of our listeners know, as well as Washington, Houston. There's a lot of good opera being sung out there.
Thank you for introducing us to the world of opera via our Metropolitan Opera District auditions, yes, coming up this Saturday at noon at the Martha Ellen Tai Recital Hall. Thank you so much for being with us, Chad.
Thank you so much, and we hope to see you there this Saturday. I'm looking forward to it.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Auf zur Waldes.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. We were earlier in the program talking with Chad Sanka about the Metropolitan Opera auditions taking place this Saturday, and we heard a little bit of a Schumann baritone solo. And now we are turning to Central Iowa, and we have Marlis Barker on the line with us, right, Marlis?
Yes. Good morning, Susan.
And I want to just introduce you by saying that the reason I wanted to do this story with you is I want to thank you and everyone and celebrate the outstanding small town papers that I've come to rely on for ideas and stories. And I want to thank everyone who works on those papers for the upbeat reporting on the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa, the same goal we have here on Local Talk. And I was inspired by a story that you had in your Christmas edition of both the Tri-County Times and the Nevada Journal. And the story was, Believe in the Magic of Your Small Town Newspaper. What gave you the idea to write this article?
Well, I'm the editor of both the newspapers, Tri-County Times and Nevada Journal. So we cover 14 communities in Central Iowa. And 5 school districts. And I always try to come up with something, you know, at the end of the year that has to do a little bit with Christmas or the holidays. And it was actually a couple things that came together. A few weeks earlier, I had been on a Facebook page kind of reinforcing the idea. Someone had said something on a post that, you know, who needs the paper anymore? And I got into a discussion on Facebook with that person and some others who joined the conversation that, you know, you may not feel you need the paper, but by getting your small town paper, you're going to be more knowledgeable about a lot of things that are going on. And this person, you know, seemed to discount the importance of the paper, whereas I was saying, I think that even though there are things you can get out there that are free now and you've got all kinds of things coming at you with social media, things like that, the paper still has a value because we go a little deeper into every small town that we cover. We try to get the story behind the Facebook post, maybe, or something like that. And so it kind of started with a discussion like that. And then I just got to thinking, I had a local grandmother that called me because her grandson was going to be in a production for Christmas, okay? So I did a story about him. And when I showed up to interview that little boy, he was jumping all over the place. He couldn't believe he was going to be in the paper. The day the paper came out, his dad told me, we have a stack of papers bought. He is so excited. He feels like he's on cloud 9 today. And then from that, another mom called me and said, hey, we've got a group of kids who are going to be in another production. Would you be able to interview them? Well, certainly, you know, because that's what we want to do. We want to get more people, more faces, everything in the paper. When I showed up, those kids were so excited to see me. I mean, they, you know, you'd have thought I was the president for a while because they were each excited that I was going to talk to each of them about their role in the upcoming production. And then I had another parent who saw that said, you know, we're a little upset because we've got another group of kids, and why didn't you feature them? And you know, for a minute I was a little taken back, but then I thought, I'm glad they're upset that they're not in the paper. Now, I reached out then, and they worked with me, and we got another group of kids that was going to be in a production. So in all, we covered probably 20-some local kids who were going to be in special, you know, plays over the holiday season. And it made me realize that if people didn't think, if there wasn't a magic about the small-town paper, no one would care. You know what I mean, Susan?
Yes, I do. I'm sitting here smiling because...
Yeah. I like it that people get upset that, hey, you missed my kid, or I wanted my kid to be in the paper, because that tells me, and the smiles I see on these kids' faces, or if I go out, I had a lady contact me one time, and not too long ago, and her parents were celebrating their 60th. They were having a big gathering uptown and wondered if I was available. And I said, you know, it just happens I am available that day. And when I walked in, there were smiles all the way across the room. They knew who I was. They knew why I was there. And oh my goodness, you know, they were so excited. So there is something still. You can post it on Facebook and share it with all your friends. But for a lot of people, there's still something magical about being in the local newspaper. That's what I was trying to hit at with that column. If we weren't important to people, then people wouldn't care.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. I'm very aware of what a newspaper can do, because as I heard you describing the scope of communities and school districts that you reach, I thought this is our beat too. But we just can't do the kind of things that you can do in a newspaper, and we do like to feature school groups. We do like to feature particularly local theater groups. And we do like to that's one of the things I appreciate your papers for, is we get story ideas that we would never be able to get any other way. And there's a huge difference between both newspapers and radio when you compare it to social media, because for one thing, even though your paper focuses on your community, it's still much broader than you're just the people that you know. You are so happy to see so many people that you know in the paper.
Right.
You get
right.
to know your neighbors better, but it's a very, very community building media.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, that I've taken the approach with social media I don't sit here and look at social media and say they're going to ruin us, okay? I look at social media as a helping tool. I see what people are talking about, and I think I'm going to go a little deeper with that. It's made it much easier for me to reach out to people. I kind of look at social media as a partner with us. I think you can say, you can sit back as a news person and say, we're getting gobbled up by social media. Or you can say, no, we're going to join in. We're going to partner up, and we're going to get more and more because of the things we see on social media. And that's what I've chosen to do, is just take it for what it's there for and get ideas from it and communicate more with people from it. And we also have great Facebook pages for both of our papers, the Tri-County Times and Nevada Journal, as do the other papers that are in Gatehouse Media here in Iowa. We're all doing things to reach out through social media as well. So people who like us on Facebook get even more. I share trivia questions, trivia photos from the past, and, you know, things like that. So I think that it helps us in what we do. And I think the hardest thing for the newspaper industry in all, and I was reading an article about this, and I was talking to our publisher about this, is that we have to figure out how to make sure people understand the value of what we do. there is value in what we do. We have to continually push to make sure that people understand that value. And I, you know, how we do that, I think, is just to continue to say, to write a column like there's magic, to not be afraid to say, you know, some of you may think the newspaper industry is going downhill, but we don't. We think it's more important than ever. We think there's a huge value there still. And that's what we have to get people to buy into, is supporting us. So I do a lot of little promos on Facebook, support your small town paper. I'm not afraid to stand up for the paper when people are putting us down for any reason on social media. I'm going to always be out there advocating that there is a greatness to what we do, and there's a fun thing for people when it comes to being in the paper. So I think it is kind of magical.
Well, it is amazing what you are able to do. And apropos the kinds of stories you do, that particular issue, the Christmas issue, which of course is going to be a special issue anyhow, but you had two personal interest stories on the front page. That's another thing, though, I'll notice. Only on a front page can you have the kind of local personal stories. Sometimes the Register actually gets to doing some of those, but I think, yeah, for them it's a slow news day. But for you, it's not only your bread and butter, but it's a really wonderful thing for the community. The two stories that I remember were the Norwegian Christmas story, which I looked at again because of the name Age Fore, which coincidentally you may hear his voice later in the program.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yes, that was a feature by one of our contributing writers, Kim Harms. And it was actually one that another writer, Lynn Marmore, had heard about. So, you know, I have several great contributing writers, which they write on a freelance basis, and they're all just outstanding. They love to write about people, and that's really what small-town papers are mostly about. So I really appreciate the contributions of our contributing writers that get paid per story, of our correspondents. We still have a couple from some of our smaller towns. And my news assistant and my sports writer are just wonderful. And, you know, we do so much with just a few people. We are constantly busy, but it's a labor of love. It really is. You have to love this work to do it.
Well, I can certainly relate to that. Well, this has been very, very interesting conversation, and I'd love to continue it to talk a little bit more about how you became an editor of two papers and the changes in publication. For example, the use of photographs, color photographs.
Yeah.
This wasn't possible, what, 10 years ago?
10 or a few more, maybe. But yeah, it hasn't been the whole time. I've been editor here for basically 26 years now. In the early 90s, when I started out here, we were still putting photos together in the dark room, measuring them with pica sticks and those pica wheels, and, you know, laying them out on cutting boards and stuff like that. So we've come a long way.
Yes, you've come a long way, and I hope you have many more years of magic ahead of you.
I do too. Thank you.
Bye, Marlis.
Bye, Susan. It's been fun.
For those of you who are just listening in, we've been talking to Marlis Barker, the editor of the Nevada Journal and the Tri-County Times, about the magic of newspapers, of small-town newspapers. And now we're moving to another kind of magic. As I was looking through the Story County Times, I noticed an article with a picture of Father Time and a giant clock. Looking it up online, I saw a poster saying, "Father Time has been hanging out at Heritage Hall, visiting his memories. Come help him welcome in the new year, January 4th, 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. It sounded like something fun to explore, so I called Barb Mallon, president of the Slater Area Historical Association and asked for Father Time's phone number. I talked to him briefly, and he agreed to talk to us this morning. Do we have Father Time on the phone?
Yes, this is Ogie.
Wow, how wonderful that you could make it this morning. Your times must be all mixed up after celebrating New Year's 24 times around the world.
You're right.
I think that's that must be harder than being Santa Claus.
Well, yeah, Santa, you know, we're kind of alike. He comes once a year to the area, and that's my duty as well. Comes around once a year.
So are you rested up from your big nights a couple days ago?
Yes, yes, oh yes. I got in very early, in bed that is, and just saw the ball drop, and yeah, it went fine.
So why did you come to Slater on January 4th? Were you too busy on January 1st?
Yes. There was too much going on, and night at the museum on Thursday evening is going to make a great evening for all in the area.
Will you come on a sleigh like Santa Claus?
No, he comes like, you know, Santa Claus, he comes first class with reindeer and everything that guides his way. I have a Norwegian kick sled that I will put to use.
So you're going to arrive on a kick sled?
Well, yeah, I will be doing the kicking, and no one will be riding on it. It's, you know, when you get to be up in age like I am, you don't need any one on your back. You just take care of yourself.
And then when you come inside, what are you going to do with your sled?
Well, that will be parked outside, and people that are interested in taking it for a kick, they can certainly do that.
Well.
So, yeah, it'll be there for the public to use just for the evening.
So what are you going to do when you come into the Heritage Hall?
Well, I think I will be mingling with the crowd, and we're hoping that the weather will keep people coming due to the cold that we've had lately. I hope it warms up some, because that brings the people out as well.
You have some living memories inside the museum, don't you? You have other people.
Yes, it's going to be a great evening. Many characters that come to life, and I will be one of those. Just walking around, mingling with the crowd, and visiting about the old year that's behind, and hoping for a good new year.
Well, that sounds like a great opportunity for people who had too many things to do on New Year's Eve. So now they have a New Year's that they can, where they can relax and go to bed early.
Absolutely. Here they got, we got some munchies and a lot of things to look at. So, yeah, it's going to be a great evening for all.
Thank you, Father Time.
Yes, you're welcome.
Let's have a New Year's song. This is one of my favorite songs, but it's not a traditional song.
have sometimes felt so faint we want to fall. Overcome, but all in all, I'd say this year in flight together has been fun. What say we make one more circle around the sun?
This is KHOI Community Radio, and it's now time to go to Cambridge, where there was an important event last week. The new Cambridge City Hall had its ribbon cutting, and part of the new City Hall will be the Cambridge Public Library. We have librarian Janet Thorson here with us to tell us a little about that. So you're not quite ready to move in yet, is that right?
That's correct.
Could you tell us a little about the history of the Cambridge Public Library and where your books are housed right now?
It was started in 1944 by some people in town that decided they wanted a public library. And the Legion gave them part of the Legion building with the idea, as long as it stayed a public library, they would only pay $1 for the use of the building. And that's where we have been since then. We hope to move before too long. We haven't got our shelving over in the new building. We're supposed to get it, I guess, next Monday. And then when it's put up, we will start moving our books and stuff over there. We went to a new system so that all of our books and everything will be online.
That means your card catalog is online. People still need to come in and check out the books.
Yes, yes. But they can call and reserve and that kind of stuff. They can do that. They can also call and renew the books, which they've been able to do even now before this, as far as on that. But no, they would have to come in and get the books. But that way it gives them an opportunity to see what we do have. Then by sometime this summer, we will have all the e-books then will be available for people that want to check out those, too.
Well, then part of the change is really a technological change that doesn't involve the space where people or books are.
No, that's right. We've been trying to do this for a couple of years, and now we have finally decided. We found a program that was less costly to us. That was one of the things that was holding us back as far as on that so many of them are so costly to small libraries. We found one that is more cost efficient for us and will be much better.
And you must have a very good person managing your website, because I noticed there were a lot of very reader-friendly suggestions that went beyond actually coming into the library. If people couldn't find books and so forth, they were helping people know more what was in the library, what's going on.
Yes, we have a board member that has been very good at doing this, so that has helped us a lot, because in the summer, she puts our summer programming on there, and usually we'll put pictures on after we've had a program as to what went on with that program.
You told me a little about her when we were talking about this program over the phone. And I think, apropos our previous story about small-town newspapers, would it be appropriate to mention her name and her story, how she got involved in the library?
Her name is Angie Fleener, and she is on the board. She has always brought her kids in. She has a daycare at home, in-home daycare, and she has always brought her kids in to the library for story time. And especially after we started doing the kids that do not go to school, I have that on Wednesday mornings, and she usually brings, and I have a couple other people that bring their kids in then too, as far as for craft and story time, which from 9 to 10 on Wednesday mornings. And she's always done, because her youngest one now is in third grade. And she started out in the carrier coming into the library, and we noticed she wasn't very old when I do flannel boards with a lot of the nursery rhymes and that type of things. And we noticed she was watching those at a very early age, and by the time she was talking, she could tell us those all back to us. So we felt like they start, even before you think about, they start learning about the books and the different things. And that's something people forget, that you need to start as early as you can to reading and to doing that type of stuff with your kids, for them to learn to love to read.
Now, I have a question. You said children who weren't going to school. Do you mean they were being homeschooled?
No. These are ones that are before they go. I have ones that are, well, she's got 3 months and I think 9 months, and then she has two or three that are 2, 3, and 4, as far as on that come in before they start to school, type of ones that come in on Wednesday mornings.
Well, now you've gotten from the technology to the people services that the library can provide. Will you be able to do more of those in your new space? I understand that the new City Hall will have a space for city offices and a 200-person common room. Is that what it is for social events? And
Yes.
Go ahead.
And I will be able to use that with programs that will be with more kids and more people. I will be able to use that also, because it will just be across the hall. So that will be much better, especially in the summertime, because I was having to take my kids in the summertime to the fire station, which has a building beside of it where it was a community center. And that's where we had to go, because we didn't have enough space in the library for as many kids as we had.
A library is a wonderful place when it's too hot to go outside or when it's a rainy day.
Correct.
It sounds like, you have certainly the story time and the other children's activities. Do you have other things that are scheduled?
We have on Friday nights, we have women that come in, and it doesn't have to be women either. We would gladly include any men or young people, young men or young girls, as far as to come. We have a crocheting and knitting, and some do cross stitch and that kind of things, and that usually has a full large table full every Friday night, from a little after 4 to 6:30, about that time, about 2.5 hours basically is what it is. And they have a very good time, I would say.
So in addition to books, you have crafts.
Right.
And do you see any opportunities, now that you have the space, are there more things that you could be doing?
Well, I hope we can do more as far as different things. I'm hoping we can be able to have different kinds of classes there, and I'm hoping to have people come in to speak on different things. Is what I'm hoping we can begin doing that, where we would have more room. I have had a couple different ones that have had book signings, And the one I had to take to another building because we did not have enough room where we are. But this will be better when I can do that in the new space. That will be much better. So I can do more of that kind of things and involve the whole, more of the town, I'm hoping.
Now, how large is your current staff?
I have one that works Monday mornings, and then me, that's it. But I do have, I will say, I do have a lot of volunteers that have really pitched in at this time, especially to enter all of our books and doing different things that we have to get done. And we've ended up, and a lot of those volunteers are ones that come in on Friday nights. So I pulled from that as far as they've all been very wanting to help in any way they can do.
Well, in terms of some volunteers that you'll need, I remember when the Ames Public Library moved, they moved across town.
Yes.
But you don't even need to get to moving vans. You can just, you could have a, I guess they had a kind of a fire brigade. That's the only name I can think of for it, where you hand one box to somebody else and pass it across the street. Is that what you're planning to do when you move?
We're planning to do that. Nevada did the same thing because they just moved basically when they moved into the new part. They did the same thing, went just closed the street and moved everything across the street is what Nevada did when they finished up their library. And that's what we're planning more or less to do. We've got a lot of volunteers that have already volunteered to come and help. So that's been really good as far as even ones that have come from out of town have been volunteering to come and help.
From out of town?
Yes, uh-huh.
Do out-of-town people use your library?
Yes, yes. Your rural, that's the ones because we are funded by the county is part of what we are funded by. So rural people, we definitely really would like to have come. But I used to have a number of ones that came from Huxley. But that was before they really had a library that was good. So I don't have as many that do come from Huxley, but it's still every once in a while I get one as far as it comes over.
I have a question about library sharing.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I used to be in Story City and occasionally want to check out a book from Story City. And I could return the book in Ames,
yep,
and it would be the same as if I drove over to Story City and returned
correct
it. Now, do you have that kind of system?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Open access is what it's called. And I think most of the libraries in Story County all belong to that. And that is very good because that way you can return it anyplace else, and then they will take care of it. And that does work really well.
I'm very excited to know that you're going to have so many more possibilities now in Cambridge with your library. And next week we'll be hearing from your mayor about what that new Cambridge Community Center will mean for the city government and the city possibilities in Cambridge. So thank you so much, Janet, for being with us and telling us about the new developments at the Cambridge Public Library.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. This is KHOI, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen, and thank you for listening and for hearing about all the new things that we have to perk us up in Central Iowa as this cold New Year's comes in. Other voices you heard were Chad Sonka, Marlis Barker, Augie Foray, who was the voice of Father Time, and Janet Torson. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Today's show was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Dichter Liebe, Opus 45, number 10, by Robert Schumann, sung by baritone Thomas Quasthoff, and One More Circle Round the Sun by Peter Mayer from his album Million Year Mind. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878, email us at khoiradio@gmail.com, or go to the contact page of our website, khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And thank you for your generous contributions that enabled us to reach our $40,000 goal for our fund drive. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Say we make one more circle.